You are listening to Fresh Oil, a podcast that examines the human condition while coming to terms with the purpose of life.
Today's interview is with Molly Gordon, and Molly Gordon is the Chief Jedi of Shaboom Inc. and a person that I met and have known and have conversation with on a couple of occasions along the way. And we've recently reconnected due to some of the common things that happen to people in life, normally a sickness of some fashion or other, or a success. And I asked Molly if she'd like to come on the show. And Molly says that she would. So, without further ado, I'm going to bring Molly onto the platform, and you'll be able to find out all about Molly at the end when she has some time to tell you anything that's on her heart or mind for anywhere from 5 to 8 minutes or more, if it so chooses to please her. So, what we do here on these interviews when we go deeper with someone is this isn't for the shiny objects, this isn't for the sound bites, it's about the person. And we interview and we ask questions that are related to the heart, to the head, how people think, and the actions that these hearts and heads think about that make them put their hands to work at something. And that's what we're going to be doing with Molly Gordon. So Molly, here's the first question. Let's jump right on into it and go deeper.
Okay.
What inspires you to think? What inspires you to think? 9 times out of 10, everybody goes, oh, that's too tough. Can we start somewhere more simple?
Well, it's a lovely question. And I don't want to skip over it, and I'm going to fumble because I think it's a question worth fumbling around.
Sure.
I guess, you know, what I wonder what in this situation you mean thinking.
Okay. Well, for me, whenever I call it the cylinder of silence, whenever I'm sitting somewhere and the room becomes, I become very aware of myself in a room or in a location, and a sense of quiet comes upon me. There's it's not unusual for a thought that's been germinating for a while or an activity I've seen. For example, the whole issue that we've got going on in our country right now about the political value of one person as opposed to another and how they're served up to us in these vitriolic sound bites or these saccharine staged moments that we're supposed to formulate an intellectual opinion of their value to us. Mm-hmm. So that makes me think, and I start thinking about the political process of things. And for me, one of the things that invariably controls or guides that conversation is that I always look at religion as the dominant ideology inside a country, and that the politics tends to be the governing ideas that make sure that the religious ideology is the dominant one all the time, and that the educational system behind it ensures that that doesn't change. So I always examine the politics of where we're at by the ideology of those three things. What's the religious control? What's the political identity? And what is the educational message that's trying to maintain this status quo? So that does that seed it a little bit for you?
Well, what I noticed is that in some circumstances, you'll find yourself quiet and reflective and you start thinking about things. And it sounds like these are some of the things that you find yourself thinking about.
Yeah.
I guess what occurred to me, Billy, is that I'm moved to think by a number of different things. And I suspect most of us are. I'm moved to think when I'm disturbed. So if something disturbs me, causes me pain or worries me, sometimes I just get reactive. But I hope I get reflective more than reactive these days.
Mm-hmm.
And so one thing that moves me to think is if there's a problem or a disturbance.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm also moved to think by a different kind of energy. And the word that just popped into my mind is wonder.
Yes, I like that word.
You know?
I like that word.
Yeah, it's such a beautiful word.
Yes, it makes me think of Van Morrison's song, A Sense of Wonder.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So when you think, where do you think best?
It really doesn't matter. I do notice, and many great thinkers report that they think best in circumstances when they have walked away from a problem. So there's actually been a study, and someday I'm going to chase it down because I dislike citing things without being able to, referring things without being able to cite them accurately.
Mm-hmm.
But there have been studies about scientists having their eureka or aha moments. It's said that the three most common moments for breakthroughs to happen is on vacation, while driving, or in the shower.
Yes, I've heard that.
So, and it occurs to me that I do good thinking when I'm just relaxing.
Mm-hmm.
But I do good thinking when I am... I did good thinking yesterday and today, I feel, sitting in my office working on a project. And it's less to do with the where than it does with the way I approach the thinking.
Mm-hmm.
And the way I pose the questions to myself, and whether I'm employing what I would call a kind of open focus,
mm-hmm.
or a closed, more effortful style of thinking.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. Yesterday I was at work, and I work in a commercial bakery. As I move towards moving into this as a full-time occupation, speaking and training and products and such like, as is the model. And we're having a meltdown in starting a new line, which is a major undertaking. And I was simply asked, what am I going to do about this?
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't think inside the problem. And so I went home and I stopped thinking.
Yes.
Just stopped thinking about anything if I could. And then I met the plant manager the next day, and the first thing I said was, here's what I'm going to do about this, and it just came tumbling out.
Yeah.
So sometimes not thinking is as important as trying to think about it, because I know that the subconscious, when you lay down, says, okay, you've asked me a question, I'll go to work for you.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So who inspires you to think?
Oh, I am so I'm inspired by people I regard as great thinkers, and they include poets.
Mm-hmm.
Scientists,
mm-hmm.
You know, people like you, Billy. When I see any human being thinking, and I'm using thinking in a very broad way here to include feeling, sensing,
yes.
wondering on all levels. When I see any human being involved in that in a very full and engaged way, I find that inspiring. There's something about regarding life with wonder and seriousness, and I don't mean heaviness, just seriousness, like life matters.
Yes.
That I find very moving. And the more I see other people regarding and reflecting on life as if it matters, the more I want to do the same.
Well, there you go. I like that answer. So I'm going to ask you a question. What is the toughest subject you think about?
Myself.
That's a very good and honest answer, and it was fast. So tell me more.
Well, I find that thinking about myself is also often the least profitable subject to think about. And I don't think that's always the case, but I think it's very often the case. What I notice is that it's tough because when I think about myself, very often I'm coming from within an idea of myself that's limited and constrained to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
And the kind of wonder and regarding a topic as if it matters that we're speaking of mm-hmm. isn't really available if we start from within a very constrained identity and idea of ourselves.
Yes, other people do not think of us as we do.
Right.
That's an interesting idea that we do tend to spend a lot of time with ourselves, mm-hmm. and it doesn't produce that much. It's whenever we're taken outside of ourselves. Do you think with a paper and pencil in hand or something else like that? And I asked that question because there was a book I read, and Westinghouse had an engineer. And when he had a problem, he would go into this little room, and the only thing in the room was a light switch, a chair, a pencil, and a blank book. Mm-hmm. And he would sit for ideas on mm-hmm. how to solve the problem. And he would turn the light off and just mm-hmm. sit in the dark. And whenever the idea came to him, sometimes he would sit there for quite a while. Sometimes it was nearly immediate. He would write down everything that he thought of with the light out, turn it back off, and then whenever it was over, he would get up and go out. Mm-hmm. And then he would give it a while and come back to his thinking. So I've gotten in the habit of mind mapping. I carry blank books everywhere I go, and now I've accumulated, I'm probably, since I really began doing this, I've maybe 30 or 40 Moleskin notebooks just jam-packed with all kinds of stuff that I go back to now, and they are like the education I gave myself for the last years about how to be available to present ideas and thoughts and to extract them from other people. Mm-hmm. So do you do anything like that, Molly?
I have done that. And I've recently thought about returning to that. I haven't thought a lot. I don't think with a pencil in my hand nearly as much as I used to. When I was a young woman, I would every day mm-hmm. for some period of time from, 20 minutes to a couple of hours of that day, you would find me writing. And I would just be writing about whatever was on my mind. And I would write myself into corners and out of corners. Mm-hmm. And I learned a great deal that way. And I stopped doing it. I'm not sure exactly why, but I stopped doing that.
Here's why I asked that question. Mm-hmm. Have you ever gone with an idea in your mind that you needed to go do something? It was in the next room. You go through mm-hmm. into the next room and you don't know why you wandered in there.
Oh, absolutely.
That's why I tend to start thinking with a pencil in hand, especially whenever I'm distracted or called. So mm-hmm. it's interesting to all the people that I've talked to over the years many, many times. And Richard Fadiman is one of the persons I always go to, and I love his lectures online. He was definitely one of the proponents of that. So was many of the other people. It all seems that all the people that think have to get the thought down into some inky kind of grave where they can go back and read the epitaphs that they penned.
Mm-hmm.
So is there something you like to think about the least?
In an absolute sense, not categorically.
Mm-hmm.
At this point in my life, it's less the content that I'm concerned with. Mm-hmm. I pay more attention to what's the quality of my thinking experience.
Mm-hmm.
And if the quality of the thinking experience is low, I go do something else.
Sweet.
If I can't access...
Turn it off.
If I can't access wonder... there's really no point in thinking about it.
Okay. I get it. So you're not allowing the drive-through biggie size kind of thinking. You're looking for something more substantial.
Yes. And sometimes what substantial feels light and easy. But
yes.
Absolutely. If I'm running around in circles, if my thinking is feeling constrained, mm-hmm. if the process of thinking is generating pressure and anxiety and fog,
Yeah.
Then it just isn't profitable. It doesn't matter whether I'm thinking about what to have for Thanksgiving dinner or what to write next week.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, what I want to do is I want to bring a gap now and switch it over into another thing. Mm-hmm. And I'd like to give you a chance to just sort of relax down into this. And if you could maybe tell me a story about working or an experience that you had in your youth that still carries over with you today.
Mm-hmm. When I read this question a few hours ago, I immediately thought of my fifth grade teacher, Mr. Houghton. And Mr. Houghton gave me our math book in fifth grade after the first few days of class. He said, "I want you to take this book, and during math class and in the evenings when you have time and are so inclined, I want you just to work through it and turn in the assignments as you go. And I don't want you to worry about the regular math class." And I just got to work through that book at my own speed, which at the time just happened to be faster than the class was moving. And I had a grand time. I had so much fun. And it meant so much to me that he recognized my ability and trusted me to be responsible for that task.
Hmm.
And I loved that. And it wasn't like a work, like, you know, babysitting or my first job in a restaurant.
It's
or my
work.
First yard in a, you know, earning money. But that's what came to mind. It was the first job I took on for myself and defined for myself. And it meant the world to me.
I really like that. It doesn't have to be about returning from the field, all worn out from youth, feeling invigorated. Mm-hmm. It's exactly the same, because not all work is physical work.
Right.
And this is a good story, and it's carried with you now a long time.
Yep.
And it
popped into my mind, and when it popped into my mind, I thought, wow, what is the relevance of that? And I thought, there's something about the joy and the sense of agency and the level of engagement that I experienced when I was working on my math project.
I like that.
That I really want to access when I
like
work
today. I'll be pulling that out of the quotes. So with that little story in mind, I usually set it up like that so that I can ask this next question, because you've pretty well answered it in your story, but I'd like to know more. Today, what brings you satisfaction in the work you do now?
Well, I love to feel those things I was describing, mm-hmm. engagement and agency. I love to learn. And when I feel that I've made a contribution, there's really nothing quite like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I have a coaching conversation with someone, or I teach a class, and I sense that the person I'm working with has received value or created value for themselves in the context that I've set up for them, that's just really satisfying. And, you know, I'm curious because another image just popped in was, you know, baking cookies or vacuuming the living room. I just love to see a job well done.
Yes. When I talk about something like that, Molly, and you've just hit it on the head, I admire competence in any fashion of work.
Yes. I've never been much of a football fan, but in recent years I've started watching football a little. And I remarked to my husband the other day, the Seahawks were playing, and I said, you know, I have a lot of issues with football. It's so hard on their bodies. It's such a physically demanding and dangerous sport, in my opinion. But I really like to see anyone do something really well.
Mm-hmm. I think the world would agree with you. And Tiger Woods and his dominance for so long at being just so completely competent at his game. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, the darker side of life is always there in the human condition. But we're very much agreed on that. I admire, I've commented, I admire watching a man dig a hole.
Yes.
And do it right and do it well and see him stand back and admire his hole.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I love pulling weeds.
Yeah.
Because the sense of accomplishment. And I think there may be an important distinction lurking in here mm-hmm. between accomplishment and what I'm calling well done and doing something perfectly.
Yes, there is a big difference. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah.
Those seeking perfection are tortured souls, in my view.
Right. And I think that may have something to do with the edge that Tiger walked.
Yes. I think he was driven by that perfection. Mm-hmm. So here's a question that sits right at the very edge of this satisfaction and competence in work well done. What's your biggest challenge in doing what you do?
The biggest challenge I think that I face, Billy, is being responsible for giving my work its full attention every time. And it's actually not just a challenge in work. It's what I feel is the chief challenge in my life at this point. It's my experience that we get to choose our attitudes and we get to choose how we think. I don't get to choose what I think. What shows up in my brain sometime, I have no idea where that came from. I'm not claiming that I get to choose that, but I get to choose how much I invest in what shows up in my mind.
Yes.
And so the challenge for me is to be responsible for what I'm choosing moment to moment and to find a way to do that with a lightness of touch so that I'm not being the thought police. Because that's no fun.
I certainly like that. Like the thought police are everywhere.
Yeah.
Outside and inside. The self-limiting beliefs and everything else that we come to.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So what do you do to go about overcoming it?
Well, I am curious about it. I find that curiosity, and I'll go back to our word wonder, are terrific assets, and that what I do consciously these days, another way to talk about what meeting my biggest challenge is, what I want to do is be moment to moment as engaged with life right now as I can be. And so I'm curious about what engagement feels like when it shows up. I pay attention to the fact that it does show up, that I am engaged. And if there's a practice, it's that practice of noticing when I'm engaged and appreciating it and sensing into it in a way that enhances my ability to access that whenever I want to. It's almost as if there's I don't think it's a mechanical process like this, but it's almost as if there's a switch.
Mm-hmm.
And the more attuned I am to having that switch on, or a volume knob is a little better,
mm-hmm.
and I turn up the volume on my level of engagement and awareness in this moment. And in different times, I do different things. Some days I'll go for a walk. Some days I'll take a nap. Some days engagement looks like writing thank you letters. Some days it looks like petting the cat. So there's not a single recipe, but there's a sensory kind of whole mind, heart, body experience of engagement. And what I
awareness
intend of awareness is just to be in touch with that and turn up the volume whenever I can.
Here's a question that I always want to bring this little section along to what I would say would be its heart. Mm-hmm. Would you do something else if opportunity arose?
Well, I guess the honest answer is I don't know. I'm pretty easy. I'll try anything. So, yes, it's very possible that I would do something else. And at the same time, when I first heard that question, I thought, well, shoot, if I wanted to do something else, I'd probably be doing it. Mm-hmm. But I'm also open. Anything could happen.
Mm-hmm. Well, the reason I throw that out like that is 9 times out of 10, or at least a very large amount of the time, when someone's living their life and they're in the flow and they're present and they're doing what they do, opportunity's always presenting itself in one fashion or another.
Yes.
And sometimes it's not that we're stale on what we're doing, but maybe we've fulfilled what it was there was to be done in that. Mm-hmm. And some people are afraid of the change, of the move to the new, to becoming the unconscious incompetent, as you were, as it might be, while they drive toward becoming the unconscious competent, somebody in the flow again. Now, that excites me.
Me
whenever
too.
That comes along, because whenever the challenge of something like that enters me, there's something that triggers it. And so I always ask it, if you would do it, because some people are very walled in and comfortable in their life, and they get the same result, and the result isn't frightening or challenging beyond a certain technical ability they possess. But there are those few that when that happens, they go, now there's a lot of work in that challenge, and mm-hmm. they might find themselves completely in the middle of it. So I always ask that.
Yeah.
Okay, here's a change up. Whenever you are living your life, things come and go. Times are as they are. You've just recently experienced a major condition in your life of having cancer. Mm-hmm. And you express all of how you felt about that before and after. You're calm, and then you're not so calm. Mm-hmm. And dealing with this thing called pain. How hard for you, as you go through life, is it for you to be yourself? Now, when I say how hard for you is it to be yourself, we know when we're comfortable with ourselves. Mm-hmm. And we know when we're not comfortable. And sometimes we move ourselves toward making life hard without anybody else helping us.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
I do know what you mean.
So how hard for you is it to be yourself?
Well, sometimes it's really hard.
Yes.
I have the capacity to make myself extraordinarily uncomfortable. I think one of your first questions was, what do you least like to think about? And it's like, well, the thing that I sometimes most think about, me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because we've got to, well, who's going to monitor us if we don't?
Yeah, of course, then there's the question that perhaps we don't need monitoring, but...
we would like it to be.
We're actually maybe the worst monitors. But sometimes I find it very hard to be myself. And I guess what I have learned about that over the last couple of years that's new to me is big deal. It's like, I don't have to, it used to be upsetting to me that it was hard to be myself. And I would become very identified with my ideas about myself in that state of mind and heart. And what's changed for me is that as I grow in my awareness that my essential self is something other than my momentary state of mind,
yes,
I'm not so concerned about how Molly is manifesting in this 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
So for example, I sometimes had the experience of waking up with a feeling of heaviness.
Yes.
And I used to wake up with heaviness, and I go, oh, again. And some days I would have thoughts about that heaviness, meaning that something was happening and something was persisting, and that it meant something about how I was, and maybe I'm depressed. And I would turn it into what I call a project.
Mm-hmm. Overthinking it, wondering about it, letting it grab the day.
Yeah. And now it's a thing, and it defines me.
For at least this period of time.
Right.
Yeah.
And now if I wake up with a feeling of heaviness, what occurs to me is that I'm noticing a phenomenon that I'm calling heaviness.
Mm-hmm.
But the I that's doing the noticing is not the I that's feeling the heaviness.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point.
And so I'm connected with something bigger.
Mm-hmm.
And my momentary experience, it's more like being on a roller coaster ride. If I'm hurtling down the hill on a roller coaster ride at 200 miles an hour and I'm screaming my head off and I'm terrified, I don't think there's something wrong with me. I'm just having an experience.
Yeah, you're on a ride.
I'm on a ride. And so sometimes I wake up in the morning and I'm on a certain kind of ride.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't take it personally anymore. I don't try to fix it.
You're abstract from the actual experience. You're treating it in a very abstract fashion.
Yeah.
Yes.
There's some distance between me and it.
That's healthy.
And I find that it's healthy. It's been useful. And it seems to me, I don't know that this is cause and effect, but it seems to me that I don't wake up with that experience quite as often. And I don't know if it's happening less or if I just care less.
Well, if you find out and define it, I'd like to hear about it.
Yeah.
So whenever, in my own life, as in yours, the same kind of things, you start to feel the weight of a certain process. Mm-hmm. And I know myself, when I'm tired, then I tend to be more driven by the awareness of the tiredness, and then things all seem to be wrong. Nothing's right. And then a good nap, wake up, something to drink or eat or a walk, and then I'm a little bit more removed from all of that, and then I think, okay, I've been alive a while now. Tomorrow this isn't even going to bother me, so just keep pushing on with something that I want to do.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you do to keep yourself on track whenever you're working with this issue of being yourself?
Yeah. I have a different relationship with that question than I used to.
Tell me more.
Yeah, I don't think so much in terms of keeping myself on track. Some years back, it occurred to me that that there were assumptions underlying this idea of staying on track.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
I questioned. And the primary assumption is that being on a certain track consistently and permanently mm-hmm. is a good thing.
Yeah.
I don't know that that's true.
Mm-hmm.
What's more valuable to me is, can I change tracks when I choose to?
Yes.
So can I eat ice cream
yes.
three nights in a row and then stop eating ice cream?
I like your answer.
Yeah.
There's a man called Bob Jones. He lived at the turn of the century, the last one. And he had a saying. He said that the right road leads out at the right place.
There you go.
But nobody tells you everything that you can experience along that road. And that's the kind of thing I'm aiming for and looking for answers that you have so adequately described. You don't know if you're on or off track. You're just moving through your life.
Right.
And you're allowed to have ice cream and stop eating it and go back to it. And you're allowed to dye your hair red if it's so something you want to do. But that doesn't mean you're off track.
Exactly.
So is there ever a time in putting this in its context that maybe you're like me, maybe you're not, but I am aware whenever it's like an agitation that I'm not at peace with myself or at ease, that there's something that's going on
mm-hmm.
that I'll give you a classic example. Maybe this would help set it for you, that you could give me a classic example in your life. I was once considering moving to Australia, and I was talking in a church. And I had slides, and I had invested a lot of research in going there. And the pastor and his wife were sitting on the front row, and I was so agitated that I didn't need to go to Australia, and I didn't need to be doing this, that I stopped midway through and told them such. Mm-hmm. And afterwards, the pastor came up and sat down, and he said to me, you know, I think I need to go instead. And he did, and he spent maybe 35 years there.
Wow.
And I went off and lived in Ireland with Sharon. And mm-hmm. so when I'm not on track, there are some built-in sort of filters that are just, they're not loud alarms, but I'm aware that this something's not right.
Yeah.
Do you have things like that?
Well, I might talk about it a little differently, but what I hear is that you had a moment of epiphany.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know that you were on or off track.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I'm not certain that analogy is working for me.
But okay.
I've had many, many moments in my life, many epiphanies. One was the one that resulted in my becoming a coach. I had a fiber arts business, and I was in a workshop at the University of Washington, actually in the use of the voice. I've always been interested in multiple things, so...
Mm-hmm.
I'm in this workshop, and suddenly, in the middle of the afternoon, September 1995, it comes to me that I'm going to close my studio, that I'm finished. And it was clear as a bell, and I didn't know what I was going to do instead. I just thought, it's over. I don't have anything to prove here. I'm done. And it was the most liberating and clear realization. And I left there. I thought, I wonder what I'm going to do to make a living. Not that I'd made much of a living as a fiber artist, but I intended to make some kind of living. And I thought, I'm going to start saying yes to all the people that have been calling, asking for help, that I've been saying, just buy a damn sweater. And that led to coaching. So many times I've been going along in life and something will just occur to me that it's time to do this. I met my husband, who is 18 years older than I am, and I met him at a bar. Two really good reasons to not get into a relationship in the conventional view.
That would be the night.
Yeah, that would be the night. And I was 21 years old when I met him. And 41 years later, I'm still madly in love with him. And the track I was on at the time was a single woman in Seattle interested in partying and playing and having fun with my friends. I was not interested in falling in love. But boom.
Yeah, shaboom.
Yeah, shaboom.
I love that. I love that. Do you have? I know that you have these... mastermind groups or whatever the terminology that people call them. I just call them my set of intimates.
Mm-hmm.
That whenever there's an issue, I pick up the phone and I'll give them a call and I'll say, hey, this is what's going on. What do you think? You know me pretty well. And I usually get the wrong answer from them because I'm thinking they're going to give me what I want to hear. And they never do. And that's why they're so valuable.
Right.
Do you have inside your group this kind of experience and response whenever you go for help?
Absolutely. And we all comment on that for each other. There's one group I've been a part of for, 8 or 10 years called the Brain Trust.
Mm-hmm.
And we meet a couple times a month by phone. We meet once a year in person now. And we also have an online message board where we interact on a daily basis. And we frequently tell each other what we don't want to hear. Somebody will show up with a grand announcement. Aha, I found it. And the rest of us will go, I don't think so.
And isn't that one of the most important kinds of metering for us in our life is to have those kind of people?
Yes. It's lovely to have friends that can truly see your blind spots.
Yes, it is.
And it's lovely that in this group of people, we've got a great deal of ability to see each other's blind spots, a lot of skill, and a lot of trust and love.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're winding down a little bit now. I've got a really good idea that you're a very analytical, driven, thoughtful person who is very much looking to live life at the corner of culture and commerce and life and living all together. And I admire that. I've always admired that from the time we spent together at that workshop. And I've asked three questions that I ask. I've asked these all my life of people. And these are the questions that I've sort of gathered over the years and put them like this. And they're evolving. For example, I'm not going to be calling it what track you're on. I'm going to ask if you're on road or off road on the path that should lead out at the right place for you. So thank you for that. Mm-hmm. So here's the first thing. Have you ever been the recipient of real charity? Now, charity is love in action.
Mm-hmm. I would say so many times.
Is there one that springs to mind? I ask this for the people that listen to this podcast and the people that I am seeking to help point a light on. It is that you don't get this because you've studied several gurus on the internet or grabbed a few courses somewhere, and all of a sudden now you have arrived. There is human acts of kindness yes. that are both random and planned in your life by people that are there to want the best for you.
You know, the incident that comes to mind is one that happened 32, 33 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I was working in an office complex, and I was separated from Miles at the time. I was drinking a lot and using a lot of drugs. And one morning I came to work, and I'm sitting at the front counter, and a gentleman from one of the offices that we were friendly with, but I mean, we weren't close by any stretch of the imagination, he leaned over the counter. I'm going to tear up.
You're welcome, my dear.
He said to me, "I hope we don't lose you to alcohol."
And I concur. I'm glad we didn't.
He said it with such kindness and simplicity that it got in. And I can't remember at this point if it was, you know, a week later or 2 weeks later or 3 weeks later. I woke up one morning and I just saw that I was like a window that was closing. And that's the day I got sober.
That's sweet. And I've known this, that you had fought this battle, because it was in conversation that you openly shared this information, that I was present at this seminar. And I sat there struck, because I'd left home at 15 and joined the Royal British Navy. Mm-hmm. And I was drowning in alcohol as well. Mm-hmm. Critically so that at 19, I was having the blackouts and the grayouts and all kinds of those things that tell you your body's got problems and your soul is in a bad place. And it wasn't until a couple of years later that charity in that issue reached in and grabbed me as well.
Mm-hmm.
So thank you for sharing that, Molly. I appreciate the bravery of that.
Mm-hmm. You're welcome.
And now, another question that I ask, and I always get different answers on this one. Do you have, count them on one hand, friendships?
Yes.
Would you share one of them with me, please? Mm-hmm. Just a little bit about it.
Well, the woman I regard as my best friend, we don't talk sometimes for years.
I agree. I've seen that.
I've known her since I met her in seventh grade. We became good friends in 10th grade. And we have been each other's best friend ever since. she was one of the first people I called when I got my cancer diagnosis. Um, I just, there are a handful of people, and my husband is another one.
Mm-hmm.
I have a friend named Sarah locally that's another, and those are the three that come to mind. And I'm blessed with many, many friends, but those three come to mind as people that somehow I know myself as my best self mm-hmm. in their eyes.
That is very well put. I'll be pulling that out of the quotes. Mm-hmm. I like that. Now, the last question, and I always save it for the end, because there are so many things that try to define us externally. But inside of us, we have something that we know. This defines me. This is who I am. Mm. What would you say the core ingredient of that would be in your life?
I think it's the desire for wisdom.
The pursuit of wisdom. Mm-hmm. At your core, that's where it comes from. Well, from what I've read and seen and the actions that you've taken and how you talk today, it's certainly apparent that you've accumulated a lot of wisdom. You've accumulated more than the mere facts of life. And so we've had a chance to examine how you think. And it's pretty precise, like a needle going through a garment. It's not scattered. We know how you feel about things. We know what the heart of Molly Gordon is a little bit more, because you've been very, very free to give us some of that advice that you've shared. And we know a little bit about the work you do. You work to give the best you've got, to bring the best out in the people that are trusting you to do so. And at the end now, what I'd like to do is, for the next few minutes, I'd like you to have the mic and to take the opportunity to bring whatever thoughts you may have been gathering towards being interviewed, or what you might want to share about your business or what's interesting you now, anything that comes to your heart.
Yes. Well, what... What I would love people to know is that I am a coach. I've been a life and business coach for 20 years now, since that fateful 3 months after that fateful day in 1995. And in recent months, actually, while I was undergoing radiation therapy, it occurred to me that I would open up my coaching practice on a pay what you choose basis. And I'm still doing that with folks. They can schedule an appointment and pay what they choose. And I'm finding that to be a very rewarding and engaging thing. I knew I wanted to get back into the flow of things after my surgery and get busy. And that was one way to do it. And I love the conversations I'm having. I'm working with a lot of people that might not otherwise be pursuing coaching, either because they weren't prepared to make the financial investment or they didn't want to make a long-term commitment. And so I'd just like people to know that opportunity is out there.
Mm-hmm.
I have a website, shaboominc.com, shaboominc.com. And as you've mentioned, Billy, I blog there. I usually do a longer written post about once a month, mm-hmm. and every week I do a short video. And I love having conversations with people about what brings them alive, what helps them feel more alive, and then what helps them express that aliveness in action.
Sweet. Of course, whenever we put this podcast episode up online, mm-hmm. all of the pertinent links to Molly and Shaboom Inc. will be there for you to catch whenever you go to download the episode. The links will be there. If you actually sign up to the daily email where I write a short commentary on getting a life lift and an insight for living, there's always a link to something that takes the idea of the day to there. And I'm always referring back to these interviews and pointing out something that's within them. And this has been a fantastic opportunity for me to reconnect with you, Molly. Thank you very much for being on the podcast.
Oh, thank you, Billy. It's been an honor.
And I'm so glad that you have survived the dance with cancer. Mm-hmm. And it's been so encouraging because my wife and I have looked at your commentary and your statements. I was held in thrall. It just had me. I'm sitting there going, in 3 weeks, you did a video. Women are tougher than men. I don't care what anybody says. Men don't know what tough is until they deal with watching someone they love fight some of the toughest battles in the world. And after a week and a half, they want to get up and cook a meal. Yeah. Molly, you're a star in my eyes. When I say a star, you're a luminary. You're a light. Mm-hmm. You've always been in the back of my mind as someone that I've always admired. I appreciate you giving me the chance to ask you some of these questions, and I'm very happy to get the responses that you've done. Molly, go ahead.
And let me know when the podcast goes live, and I will share it with my folks.
By trial and error, I've learned that as soon as I put it together, it goes out on a Sunday afternoon, and I will send you on a Saturday night the link to where the podcast is going to be and any other pertinent information related to it. And I will be, of course, broadcasting it all of the next week and then the following month, and then throughout the year, I'll be referring back to it and putting it out there to promote your site, because the people that I choose to interview, I also want to make sure that they're promoted, because they're the kind of people at the corner of culture and commerce and life and living that we need to bump into. Ladies and gentlemen, Molly Gordon.
You've been listening to Fresh Oil with Billy Delaney. Thanks for pressing play.